Sonia, thanks very much for joining us and taking a little time out of your whirlwind trip with the Peruvian contingent. Very much appreciate it. Sonia, how did you first decide you want to get into law?
Well, I've always had an interest in how the world works and just seeing how different things come together to make a society work or not work, I suppose. And for me, law was always sort of the underpinnings of what makes a society function. And having good regulatory and legal frameworks really, I think from my perspective and from my experience internationally, makes or breaks a society in a large respect. And so for me, I was really interested in understanding and really learning how societies function and how we can use the law to advance some of the things that we want to accomplish and to continually get better and grow as a society.
And your educational background certainly reflects some of this interest in how the world works and the world. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes, I mean, I've always had this passion and interest for traveling and seeing what's out there. And so I wanted to take advantage of every opportunity I could to go abroad and experience different cultures, different people, and bring some of that knowledge back. And so in university, I did an exchange for 6 months in Mexico, and I lived in Mexico and I learned how to speak Spanish. For me, languages were important because it was a way to understand what was going on in a different part of the world, and Spanish was always something that really fascinated me. So it's a big part of our planet now, speak Spanish, so I learned how to speak Spanish and spent 6 months there. And then in my last year of law school, I did a year of law in Argentina in South American business law. And so that was really interesting because it wasn't just now learning the culture and the language, but actually understanding how to do business and what makes that region work the way it does, or at times not so well, in Argentina.
And in terms of Mexico, what was it like working as an advisor to the president of commission for the government, and how did that opportunity come about?
Yeah, so after my 6 months, my semester in Mexico, I wanted to get a little bit more interest. I've always been interested in politics as well and political systems and legal systems. And so I spoke to all my friends and my colleagues and teachers and professors, and I managed to get an internship with the president of the newly created Commission on Human Rights and Justice in Mexico. And so I spent 3 months working with him, helping him to create the policies around this new commission that was created and implement some of those, particularly with communities and how they affected marginalized people and human rights in Mexico at the time, which was fairly, I mean, now more than 10 years ago, it was a fairly novel concept at the time in Mexico. And so this was a lot of comparing best practices, sharing Canadian examples, how they can do things better and make it really successful. So that was, it was an interesting experience, to say the least.
That's Mexico. Let's cross a few time zones. Tell me a bit about your role as an international election observer in the Ukraine during the Orange Revolution.
Well, I'm Ukrainian by background, so I grew up in Toronto, speaking Ukrainian, being part of the Ukrainian community, as any good Ukrainian here in Toronto, I'm sure you know, is. And so then, you know, the Orange Revolution happened, and it was a very exciting time for us. And so I applied as a first-year law student at University of Ottawa. I applied to be an election observer with the government, and because I had sort of this starting legal career and my Ukrainian background and language, I was chosen to go as an observer, and I got sent to the eastern part of Ukraine, so now I'm sure everyone now is aware of what that means. It was definitely somewhere where we were not welcome. It was a little bit scary at times. There was definitely a lot of things that were not done properly in those parts, a lot of things that you would, you know, read in your textbooks and you'd see it in action. So it was very interesting. You know, as observers, we weren't allowed to obviously make any comments or change the way they do things. You have to allow people and countries to run themselves, but you can definitely make observations and comments that I think were put together in the UN later makes a decision as to whether or not the elections were free and fair.
And back then to the home front, had the opportunity to become a legal advisor for the UN Development Program for the PMO's office arise, and tell me a little bit about that role and what you took away from it.
Yes, so actually this was in Ukraine. Still, so this was, I came back and to finish law school, and in my second year of law school, I decided that it was such an interesting experience, this being an election observer, that I wanted to go back and I wanted to, now that the Democratic Party had won, and I wanted to go in and help in some way to see how that would play out. And so I, you know, this is starting out, and I'm sure lots of people have had this experience where I set my heart on it, and I must have emailed and called about 100 organizations to be able to get some sort of internship position, because working for the UN or these organizations is not an easy thing to get, especially with no experience. And so so finally, after months and months, I managed to get an internship with a Canadian lawyer, actually, who is now, was now at the time senior advisor, legal advisor to the Prime Minister of Ukraine on democratic reform. And so I was contracted out by the United Nations Development Program to assist his office and him on drafting policies, recommendations to the Prime Minister on how to comply with the Millennium Development Goals that they had signed on to for democratic reform, accountability, transparency, all these governance and these sort of processes that they have to put into place at the very beginning of creating this new democratic system. So, I mean, that was, it was so interesting because you're really seeing an entirely, a complete change 360 in a system. So going from, you know, a communist system that really had the underpinnings and all the systems in place to support that, and to now moving to a democracy and all the things that you need in place to be able to move that forward, it was really an interesting experience.
So one of the takeaways certainly would have been persistence.
Persistence, patience. Yes, definitely.
You down to South America now. You spent some time as a legal intern at the Public Defender's Office in Buenos Aires before you took an articling position at Osler in 2007. Why did you decide to join Osler?
It was interesting because actually, you know, I went to school, I wanted to change the world, law school, I wanted to change the world. I had this sort of, you know, passionate perspective on the world. And then, you know, having those experiences with the United Nations and with governments and public defender's offices, and I realized that, you know, while they were all very well-intentioned, it was a frustrating experience a little bit because I realized there wasn't the capacity for change in those institutions. And time and time again, I would meet with, you know, colleagues of my, you know, family or friends or, you know, and people in business, and realizing that business is really a driving force of change in our world, and for good or bad, but also a lot of businesses doing a lot of great things. And so from my perspective, I realized, well, you know, I really want to be part of something that is driving change and interesting things happening in our, in innovation and ideas that are able to create impact on the world. So, you know, I interviewed with the top business firms, and obviously, you know, Osler was, you know, right away, stole my heart. I had a really great time here, and I enjoyed my interview, and I enjoyed my experience. And so, to me, that was sort of the natural progression for me in terms of my learning.
Excellent. Our good fortune. You you continued on as associate until 2010. Anything in particular you took away from your experience at Osler, or any memorable anecdotes that you'd like to share? And remember, we can edit some of them out of it. If you like.
No, I mean, you know, I had such a great time. It was such an amazing place for me to start and to gain the skills that I took with me. You know, we had I was very fortunate to have an excellent articling year, which I think a lot of people are still here, and we still keep in touch, and that's been great. I think one thing that I always will remember fondly now, not so fondly at the time, was as, you know, day two of my articling year, I was thrown into the boardroom on the CanWest Alliance Atlantis merger exhibition, and I had absolutely no idea what was going on, and none of us did. You know, with three articling students thrown in there in the middle of the night, and, you know, papers were flying, you know, there was pressure and things were going crazy, and so really that was sort of as much as you can call diving into the deep end of learning. And I just remember all the partners and being so wonderful, and, you know, sitting at 3 in the morning with senior partners in the boardroom, breaking down for us once things had calmed down from the craziness of the day, breaking down, you know, the tax structures and understanding what it was. And, you know, I mean, the closing agenda was more than 2,000 items, right? And so how are we supposed to find what is what, and what is a shareholder agreement anyway? And so it was such an interesting opportunity to learn and get to know people in a what could have been, you know, it was a very high-pressure situation, but ended up being a really great experience.
Excellent. After almost 4 years post-2010 at with our friends at Borden, Ladner, Gervais, you started Global Indigenous Development Trust and Equilibria Partnerships. Why'd you make that shift?
So I spent all this time in business, and I actually started the Latin American practice, and I was national chair there at BLG. And so I had a lot of time to see companies operating in Latin America specifically, and a lot of conflict, a lot of mining projects in particular, a lot of resource development not going forward because of conflicts with communities, a lot of things being stalled, a lot of costs associated with that, a lot of, on the other side, you know, wisdom and interest from the communities to develop, I mean, abject poverty, horrible circumstances, and I realized there was an opportunity for collaboration rather than conflict. And I realized that there was an opportunity where both sides could benefit and develop. You know, there was always, you know, on the business side, companies interested in doing things right, interested in doing things better, but there was a gap, there was a chasm between the two, and for some reason they just weren't able to meet in the middle and find a way where projects could be very successful and move forward and from a business perspective be successful, but then that communities could also thrive and develop and benefit future generations. And so from my experience of working with communities and understanding their perspectives and their needs, you know, I knew that there was a possibility here to bridge those together. And so I had the fortune to meet some really fantastic Canadian Aboriginal leaders who had found those models of being able to work effectively with industry and benefit their communities at the same time. So my business partner, Jerry, he took his community in BC from 98% unemployment to zero, working successfully with Barrick and with other mining companies. And now, you know, they're good friends, and they sit at the table and they have dinner, and at the same time, his community is now signing billion-dollar contracts, right? And so so I saw these examples, and I just thought, you know, this is the kind of thing that if Latin America is going to be the engine for growth, you know, resource development is going to be the engine for growth in Latin America in the next decades to come, and Canadian companies are a majority of the presence in Latin America, I think we need to do something about this. So I created a social enterprise. The Global Indigenous Development Trust is a not-for-profit sort of development organization with Equilibria is our for-profit division. So we offer services to both communities and companies and bridge their interests to create win-win solutions.
Fantastic. Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Well, it's been a pretty crazy year and a half learning how to be an entrepreneur and traveling the world. And I think that in 5 years, I would like to be able to be in a position where we've helped a lot of companies, a lot of communities, and had a lot of success in bringing a little bit more stability to the resource sector in Latin America. And elsewhere, we've been asked to look at Indonesia and Ghana and a few other places in the world. So, you know, there's an opportunity there to share some of these models and best practices that we've developed for successful resource development in other places.
Excellent. We will follow that with interest, that's for sure. I think you've touched on this in a number of your responses, but sort of in a single word or a single sentence or a paragraph, because we're lawyers and we think that way, what's the driving force that drives the pursuit of your wide range of career interests?
Well, I think, I mean, it's really bridging interests and creating solutions for collaboration rather than conflict. I think that business has a big role to play in that, and it can be a driver for good. I've seen it many times, and there is, you know, I think a lot of misinformation around in Latin America and around the world about the perils of business and resource sector and things like that. But in fact, it is, you know, the mining industry, for example, is a leader in so many areas, in environmental stewardship and community service and in all these different areas. And I think that there's an opportunity to share some of that a little bit better and promote some of the good things that are happening and be a real driver for change, positive change in some of these places that really need it.
Let's look at the next generation then. What advice would you give a young lawyer hoping to make an impact in the world with their law degree in the same fashion you have?
Well, I think it's a matter of just finding what you're passionate about, what your interests lie and your skills lie, and as soon as those align, then you've created magic. I mean, it takes off, and you enjoy what you do, and you make a difference at the same time. And I think that's if you can find that, then you're very lucky.
indeed. I'm not sure you have a lot of spare time, but what do you enjoy doing in your spare time to the extent you have it? And more importantly, how do you make sure you set aside time to do what you like doing quite apart from this passion?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really good question because, you know, we're lawyers, and so I am definitely a type A personality, and I feel like, you know, even 3-4 years ago, someone asked me to take a break. I'd be like, what? I can't take a break. I have so much to do. But I've really learned over time that actually taking a break and doing things that make you feel better health-wise and mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever it is, really gives you more time in the day. So actually I meditate every morning for 20 minutes. I run at lunch for 45 minutes every day. Outside, I don't like the gym, so it has to be in nature, no matter whether it's raining or how cold it is. Lately, it's been in Peru a lot, so it's been not so bad. and I just make sure, and I do yoga and lots of different activities. I just make sure I'm always setting some time aside for myself.
Excellent. You've circumnavigated the globe a number of times. What's the greatest adventure you've ever been on?
Well, that's a good question. I think that what comes to mind is 2 years ago, I, with a good friend, we decided on a whim to hike Aconcagua, which is the highest mountain summit in the Americas, in North and South America, and it's 5,000 meters above sea level, and it's in Argentina. We just hiked it, very little training, to be honest, and we wanted to get to base camp for New Year's. So we managed to make it. It was very tough. It was quite a journey, you know, extreme weather conditions, you name it. And we get to the top, and of course, because it's Argentina and New Year's, they had brought up something like 30 cases of champagne and wine and had an entire steak barbecue at the top of this mountain. And we're thinking, oh my gosh, we're at the top of the world, and we're having like a full-on Argentinian asado with a really good Malbec. That's a good way to ring in the New Year.
As if you weren't lightheaded already.
Yeah, the next day was not so pleasant.
Because we're always looking to fill our own bookshelves, what's the last book you read and what did you think of it? Or what are you reading now?
So what I'm reading now is called Power versus Force by Dr. David Hawkins. And really talks about how authentic internal power beats out external force every time. And so if you can find your own strength internally and, you know, talks about things you can do to get there and your own authentic power will over time beat out any sort of external force that might be brought on you. So just stay true to yourself and find what keeps you going.
Well, I think given what you've been up to over the last little bit, it's a very, very appropriate title for
yes.
you. Thank you very much again. I really appreciate your coming and sharing that with us and with your fellow alumni at OSLR.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.